Mania talk, people were either strongly for or strongly against sandboxes. It doesn't really seem that there were people in the middle. And I mean, the people who are against sandboxes have real legitimate points. For example, it really does seem to be against the wiki philosophy. The wiki philosophy is that you present all, that you put everything out in the open, and that incrementally over time, what people add will eventually make the article better. And the idea is that when you're putting something in user space in your sandbox, you're not allowing that to happen. I mean, and that's fundamentally against, the idea of what the wiki is supposed to be. Everyone contributes, and when there's a dispute, you can take that dispute to the talk page. But that once you when you have the article in the sandbox, no one can even dispute about it because people don't even know it's there.
But it's not as though that's being kept in the sandbox forever. I mean, to me, it seems like that's a long-term, short-term thing. From my perspective, okay, if the technology existed then to see what people are adding while they're adding it, that is to say, like real-time viewing of what people are typing, like, is that going to be necessary? Because then, oh, well, I don't know what they're adding. It just seems like that's a kind of urgency of transparency that to me doesn't seem very important. But that's just me.
Let me weigh in here,
Yeah, that. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
just for a second.
Phil?
So it's a little different in controversial and non-controversial areas. In the very controversial
Yeah.
areas, for example, there are people who are dead set against the topic even appearing at all because they view it as almost like a culture war. This sounds kind of funny when you're talking about Mary Shelley or whatever, where things aren't quite so inflamed. But in areas like the paranormal or pseudoscience or pseudo-medicine, quack medicine, creationism, conspiracy theories, and so on, passions are extremely inflamed, and there can be just a real battle. And you can really end up with severe trouble where you're not actually even able to produce anything because the goal of the other party is not to help you write an article. The goal is to drive you off Wikipedia and drive all your content out. And so in those areas, it's more like a street fight. It's not really a collaborative thing. So there, a sandbox can be very helpful. It might be the only way to get an article started. I will also point out.
Right, I've seen that actually when I was reading the archives of homeopathy again for my Wikimedia paper. They use the sandbox to try to sort of restart the article, like a sort of blank slate. Let's start over. But I think the kind of sandbox we're talking about here is when one person is doing it. Although even at when I was reading the homeopathy archives, there was the accusation of ownership that the person who had started the sandbox and said, only I'm going to make the changes because we're going to agree on the changes on the talk page first. And then once we all agree, once we come to a consensus, then I'm going to make the changes. That was apparently an ownership problem. And that, I think, is another one of the accusations that are always going to be leveled against the sandboxes. And in fact, that's been leveled against me. We have a lot of the Jane Austen articles in sandboxes right now because they're just a mess. I mean, they're just notes. They're not an article. You couldn't even put them up if you want to. And on the Jane Austen talk page, someone said, well, we really don't think this is a good idea that you're putting all of these in sandboxes because people can't contribute to them. And even though every time somebody comes by the Jane Austen talk page and says whatever they want about the Austen article, we say, oh, are you interested in helping us? We are desperately in need of people to help us because it is so hard to write all of these Austen articles. And every time we invite people, of course, they say no because they don't want to do all the research. Even though we have all our notes online, this is a desperate plea to anyone. We have all our notes online. They can read all our notes and help us. They have not seemed to want to help us write the article, but they still felt that having the article in the sandbox was sort of like a put off to, to change. Because again, not anyone could go and edit it unless we invited them to come and edit it.
Well, in the homeopathy case, that was a different kind of sandbox. You're quite right. There was one person implementing
Yeah.
the changes, but everybody, and there was a group of about 10 or 15 or 20 of us that were suggesting changes, and that actually was the only way the article could be markedly improved, which it was. It was markedly improved and got to GA status. I don't know if it got beyond GA status. Then we got back to the same pitched battles, but at least we were fighting on a much higher level than we were before it went into the sandbox. I will point out that method of doing it where where you had to have consensus before a change was implemented. That's something kind of like I envisage would happen with the flag revisions that German Wikipedia has. They also tried it at Evolution. I don't know if they're still doing it, but they had sort of a committee of people who sort of managed it. They had a draft article. If you wanted to get something in, you would edit the draft article, and if this committee agreed that it was a worthwhile change, then they would implement it in the locked Evolution article itself because it was getting so much vandalism. The other thing I was going to mention about sandboxes, which came up in one of the not the Wikipedia Weekly shows where they were editing an article live, and anybody who's done this is part of the reason that it drove me to sandboxes actually. When you start an article and you say, well, I'm going to start with the first couple of sentences and then enter it, and so you start with a stub, a good fraction of the time, people who are on recent changes patrol will take a look at your two or three sentences, and even though you say you're building it, and it was your last edit was 30 seconds ago, they'll delete the whole article on you. And so that's very, very difficult. So, to in some of these areas where there are people patrolling pages for new articles and trying to delete them as fast as you can write them, sometimes the only way to get it started is to actually start in a sandbox. And so when it comes live, at least it's got 20 sentences and three references, and they don't delete it immediately on you. And they had that happen at not the
Or you can
Wikipedia
just write it
Weekly.
off Wiki.
Yeah, or off wiki. Yeah.
Yeah. Or
Which I've
Yanker.
done
So,
that
yeah.
too. Yeah,
Sure.
just, yeah.
Moni, did you have something about announcing things beforehand?
Well, I generally tend to stick to articles where it's not a very high quality, or it's been a B class article for a while, a year or so, many months, or something like that. So, I generally tend to go to the talk page, announce that I'm interested in rewriting the article, ask if anyone wants to help, and tell them that I'm going to do it in a sandbox. I did that with To Kill a Mockingbird. I did that with Stonewall Riots. I did that with Harvey Milk and a few others. I have yet to receive any kind of feedback on really want to help out with this. Actually, I did receive a lot of good input when I rewrote Mulholland Drive, which I did more like in chunks, adding to the article that existed instead of completely rewriting it from top to bottom.
Wait a minute, wait, wait, wait,
But
wait. I'm
it
sorry. Let me interrupt here for a second. Are you saying that an article about a movie got more responses from the Wikipedia community as a whole than did an article about an important work of literature? I'm very
I'm
confused.
shocked.
I can't imagine.
Well, yeah, that's actually what happened. I 2 weeks before I started adding information to To Kill a Mockingbird, I posted on the talk page that I think it should be a featured article, even though I had not yet written one. And if anyone wanted to help out, then please let's go ahead and talk about what should be done. And I ended up doing the majority of the work myself. And that happened with a few other articles that I did. But when I went to Mulholland Drive and said that, the movie was in my head and I just wanted to write about it and learn more about it, then as soon as I started adding information, three or four different editors chipped in and started to edit what I had done, and it was a different writing experience.
And that was in the namespace, or was that in your user space?
Well, I would add chunks. I would write chunks in a sandbox, like the character section. I would write paragraphs and then post it as I was reading more about it. But other editors would come along almost immediately and edit and clean up and kind of twist my, not twist my words, but kind of saying you get some POV here and you need to move it, you need to change it. And I do my best. It's a more community experience writing Mulholland Drive than it was writing To Kill a Mockingbird.
I actually co-wrote Mary Shelley with QP10 QP, and it was great because QP10 QP focused a lot on the biography, and I focused more on the writing part, and it was just like such a load off because I didn't have to do everything the way I had done with so many of the other author biographies I had done. And I could just read the biographies much more lightly, didn't have to take so many notes, and I could sort of rely on QP to do all of that detail, and we could make small decisions about that together, and then I could focus much more on the literary stuff, which is more my specialty anyway. It was just so nice to work with somebody because usually I'm all alone on articles. You know.
And I mean, for me, at least from my perspective, you know, it comes down to a personality thing. Like I find that in general, especially when I'm doing things like writing, I find that I work much better by myself. Like I like to be the hermit in the tiny little, you know, corner office and just leave me alone and like bring me a new pen every once in a while. And then I can, you know, just sort of put it out there and be like, okay, now that I've got something that I'm happy with, you know, other people, please, you know, give us your thoughts and perspectives and stuff. And that may be sort of the philosophical break between those who prefer the sandbox and those who prefer it out in the namespace. But I would definitely agree with what Phil said about the distinction between controversial articles and non-controversial articles. You know, if I'm writing about Le Père Goriot, it's not like there's a horde of Balzac aficionados who are like, hey, we demand that you include this perspective or whatever it is. So okay, we've done a lot of research, we've got notes, we've got a draft, we've got something that we're relatively satisfied with in terms of doing the initial research and the first round of writing. What's the next step? Should we take it to a good article?
I a lot of times
Take
leave
it to
it.
peer review first. Go ahead,
Well,
Phil.
it depends on your perspective. Some people, like Moni, say she goes to peer review and then to good article and maybe to FA. And I know this is a big focus for Awadawit. I mean, she produces a tremendous amount of featured content. I, on the other hand, I'm not that wild about the peer. I've only done peer review a little bit and good article a couple of times and featured article a couple of times. I'm not that wild about that process. I'm not really writing that much for acclaim by outsiders. I'm writing to learn something myself, and so I feel good about it. Maybe I've got too much of an ego. I think I can judge it better than anybody else. So when I'm happy with it, I'm happy to leave it because I feel I've presented the best thing that I can, and I'm happy with it. I've learned something, and then I move on to the next one. I'm
But
not
Phil, I'm sorry to
impartial.
interrupt, but I have to ask. I mean, what about your ego? Isn't there some element of your contributions here that you feel has to be honored in the form of a barn star or a little green plus icon?
Well, I have a lot of barn stars, but you know, to me, you know, I guess maybe this is the thing of having a fairly extensive background in academic research and writing already. I'll try to remember. There's a guy. He was at a UK. I've got the. Got it in my notes somewhere, the quote. It was about 100 years ago. He was teaching a course, I think it was in ethics or philosophy at one of the UK universities. Said, "Gentlemen, the main purpose of this course or a university education, so you can tell when somebody else is talking complete rot." And he all there's a sort of a similar quote that said, "The main reason to get a PhD or to get, you know, an advanced education is so that you're not impressed by anyone else who has one, because you realize that most of the other people like that are morons." And so after you've done this for a long time, you kind of get a kind of a thicker hide, sort of, to a certain extent. And maybe you've got to have a huge ego to go to that tremendous amount of extent of getting all the advanced degrees. And so I don't really care that much about getting barn stars in these areas. I mean, I mainly work in areas in which I'm not an expert in because I'm just trying to learn. And I know I don't know a dang thing about biology, and I'm just trying to learn a little bit about biology and make something pleasing to myself. And if it's got a GA status, well, you know, what do I care about somebody who's maybe a high school student or maybe a college student giving me a GA, or maybe even somebody with a bachelor's degree who's working as an accountant? I don't care if they give me a GA. And when I've gone through the FA process, for the most part, I've been very unimpressed with the reviewers, to be honest. I mean, maybe that just sounds like I'm really conceited, but and maybe I am, but I just roll my eyes when I see the remarks of some of my fellow editors and their suggestions. I'm not saying everybody, because there are some people I have tremendous respect for, and they are the people I will invite in for private reviews. Like Awadewit, I'll invite in, and there's several others. For example, Silence is another one. Orange Marlin, in certain cases. These are people I really know they've got expertise in some area, and I'll invite them in, and they will do almost invariably. I'll learn something from them, and they'll improve the article drastically. But the average
Well, let's talk
run-of-the-mill
about the
drive-by
benefits.
editor, no. Go ahead.
Let's talk about
What?
the benefits we can get from some sort of peer review. Because, I mean, for example, I don't expect that if I submit an article about Jane Austen to the peer review, I'm going to get some Austen scholar who's
Right.
going to come by and say, well, why didn't you include, more about Edward Said's post-colonial reading of Mansfield Park? I really don't expect that that's going to happen. And I hope to God, actually, that it doesn't descend into some, war between Austen scholars wanting to include more about this view or more. Actually, that would be terrible if that happened. It would be really bad. But one of the things I'm always interested in when I go to peer review is if the average reader can understand what I wrote. Because, I'm used to writing for a scholarly audience. I am not really used to writing for the average reader. And if the average reader comes by, if that high school student comes by, if that college student comes by and can't understand what I've written about Austen or Shelley or Wollstonecraft, then I failed in writing an encyclopedia entry for the general public. So that's always one of the questions I have, for example, when I go to peer review. Did I convey what literary scholars often write in really obscure language, in a way that people can understand these works and these authors? So that's
That's
often one of the things I'm really looking for.
something Willow's brought up in terms of mathematical articles. Like when she did Problem of Polonius, she was like, hey, does it make sense to you who's, I'm really illiterate when it comes to math, and so she was, trying to make sure that it really fit and that I could understand it. And I think there's a point in certain math articles where there's a level where I'm just never going to reach it, and I'm just the wrong person to ask about that. Mona, you said that peer review is going to be your next step after you've got a first draft done. Why would you send it to peer review first instead of GA first?
Actually, on the articles that I post for directly from my box, my sandbox, I will put it for peer review and GA at the, on the same day, and hope that I will get in-depth reviews from different people. And I'm hoping to get as wide as an audience as possible. From peer review, it could be basically anyone who trips along and sees the article. It could be somebody who's got the article watch listed and sees that peer review is now on the talk page. Even the GA review is on the talk page. And I hope to be able to find anybody who's interested in reading it who can say, I don't understand this part. I don't understand what you're trying to say here. I don't understand why this part is important. Why is it significant? Why is this in the article? And that usually means that I haven't explained myself very well, or I haven't explained the topic very well. In the terms of a GA review, you get somebody who hopefully is very experienced in reading a lot of articles, who will be a little bit more conscientious on the article's totality, and be able to say if it qualifies as a GA. And hopefully by now I know what the characteristics of a GA are. I really do hope that I do. But you also get somebody who has a lot more experience than perhaps somebody who trips along and finds the article. I mean, you can get anonymous IP users making comments during a peer review, which are just as valid as anybody who has spent a couple years watching the article. And then you get somebody who has a lot of experience reading different types of articles, the good, long, well-researched articles, who can make comments on your notes, on your citations, on your images, and give you a perspective that you just haven't thought of before. And really, for peer review, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for somebody else's perspective to come in and say, I read it, this is what I thought about it, and I don't understand why you did it this way.
Well, I only work on
Okay,
areas.
so go ahead, Phil.
I was only going to say, I only work on articles in which I know nothing, almost nothing about them, like medical articles or history or what have you. So things that I'm not trained in, I'm not an expert in, I avoid for the most part areas in which I know something about. And so I think there's much less chance of me writing something incomprehensible because I know in my own area I can write stuff that is well beyond what the average reader and the average, even the average expert, will be able to read, because I do it all the time. And in fact, that's part of the goal, of course, of writing, technical writing, when you're writing in your own area, because you're writing for a very specialized group with a very specialized audience in mind. I'll give an example. When I wrote Bees and Toxic Chemicals, I mean, I don't know anything about apiary or bees or what have you, and these different types of chemicals, never took biochemistry. But I just thought it was interesting. I'd heard a book review of somebody who'd written a book that was somewhat related, and so I got kind of excited about it. I wanted to see what I could find out about it. Instead of going to a peer review or a GA, what I did is I then went to the wiki projects that are concerned with bees and toxic chemicals, and I invited people that are real entomologists and real beekeepers, about five or six of them, and they looked at my stuff and said, "Oh my gosh, you're an amateur and you're an idiot. This is, get me a reference for this. Where on earth did you get that nonsense? This is badly stated." And it didn't bother me a bit. Whereas in my own area, if I'm dealing with people that are high school students that are telling me I'm an idiot, I'm not. I don't like that very much. My friends that are doctors and write medical articles, to have morons telling them they don't know anything about medicine, and the guy's a specialist in area X or Y, it doesn't go over very big. But I don't care if I'm told I'm an idiot about bees, because I know I'm an idiot about bees. That's why I wrote the article. I'm trying to learn a little tiny bit about bees, and if an entomologist says, "Well, this is a complete load of nonsense," well, great, let's rewrite it. After that was done, and that's sort of like a peer, well, it's a focused peer review, because I chose selectively the experts, just like I did with falsifiability. I chose specific people that I knew from having been on Wikipedia. I knew where to find experts who could actually do a focused review and make sure that I hadn't said anything really stupid, being an amateur writing it. And then at that point, somebody actually put it up for GA for me, and it went right through to GA without much problem. But that wasn't really my goal. I did it kind of the opposite way around, and it's because of the type of articles I focus on.
I'll say from my perspective as a, public school English teacher, the GA and FA process, if nothing else, I find that it gives the general audience some sort of indication that there has been some sort of semi-formal review process that has taken place with an article. That is to say, if a student of mine is researching a basketball player and they're reading the Wikipedia article, obviously I tell them, okay, this is just a starting point. You have to go to these other sources and so forth and so on. But I can get a sense of, whether the article has been just filled with, fan crust, or if there is, actually there's been a GA review. I can look at, okay, that green icon gives me some sort of indication that there's been, like I say, a bit of a review process, and the FA star is even more of that. So I think that's where it serves as a little bit of usefulness for me.
Well, I would also like to point out that reviews also help me a lot with prose. I mean, you need other people to look at your writing. One person isn't going to produce a brilliantly written article. And we talked about that before on the copy editing podcast. But reviews, whether they're at peer review or GAN, help me a lot with prose. And specifically, people who take out sentence by sentence by sentence. So, the ones that don't make sense or are illogical or, ungrammatical, that really helps me. Because, you just are going to miss things. You're just going to miss things. You're not going to get everything. And so, for me, that's extremely helpful part of the sort of feedback process wherever you're getting it done.
So in terms of, getting the most from feedback, we had talked a little bit earlier, what about you and I, and I know I've mentioned this with Moni, that it's so important, I think, when you're putting something up for peer review to, at that point, the question of ownership has to be key in your mind, and the recognition that you are now in receptive mode. I think it's so important for us to go from, especially, and it's tricky if you've done, if I do a month of research on Chinua Achebe and then I put it out there, and suddenly someone says, "Oh, well, what about this other thing?" I don't want to hear them talking about that because I've just made myself the expert from spending a month researching this thing. It's hard for me to put that in check, but I think that's when it becomes so important to do so because, like you said, then is when you're getting that outside point of view. And Phil, your point about, hearing from experts in the field, absolutely. You've got to be able to be deferential and say, "Okay, you have studied this a lot longer than I have," or at the very least, "This is something that you think is important," and I have to be able to look at that and say, "Okay, yeah, we need to incorporate that in the article. What is best for the article at that point?"
I mean, there are instances, and of course, I don't edit in these areas, but there are two or three fields in which I am among the handful of world experts in the field. And I don't edit those articles just because I don't want people to tell me nonsense. I don't want to hear it. Whereas in
See, that is just really
beekeeping,
too
I don't
bad.
care.
This
It
is,
is too bad.
I have had people tell me that, what I've written on Mary Wollstonecraft is wrong, whatever. And I've actually read about Mary Wollstonecraft for several years. I'm not a worldwide expert on Mary Wollstonecraft, but I have read almost everything that's been written about her now. And someone who comes along and looks something up on Google Books for 5 seconds, they don't actually know what they're talking about.
Yep.
And it is extremely frustrating to have to explain to people over and over again, no, I do know what I'm talking about. I have read everything that's here, in this bibliography. And, and to have to do that over and over again, actually, people do get tired of that.
It's
people who know what they're talking about do get tired of it. And that is, I think, part of the sort of anti-elitism that people talk about that exists on Wikipedia. And it's hard to deal with. It really is hard to deal with. I don't mind the people who are like, oh, yeah, I see what you're talking about, whatever. The people who stick with it. Yep. Who insist that they're right over and over and over again. It just makes you want to leave articles and leave peer reviews and whatever, because you're just like, whatever, well, what's the point of this?
That's right.
It's just very frustrating.
When I'm dealing with comments like I'd get from my students or my interns, when I deal with comments from people like that or technical managers of organizations I'd be a member of that are just basically – they're adept in related areas, but not in my specific area. And I get retarded questions like that over and over and over again. It just, no, I don't want to deal with it. Forget it. I can't be bothered. Whereas if I go in an area like I'm working on prions or lactose intolerance, I don't know anything about lactose intolerance. I think it's kind of interesting. I don't know anything about prions or prions. I don't know if you call them prions or prions. Anyway, those weird folded proteins. I don't know anything about it. I'd like to know something more about them. I don't know anything about genetics. I'd like to know more about it. And so I go in, I learn something, and then I call in the experts. And I've got no problem with an expert taking the time out to teach me and say, well, you got this completely wrong. You're a complete fool here. And that's great, because I know I'm a fool. And I've got no problem with that whatsoever. In my own area, no, I don't want somebody that clearly is like somebody way, way below me telling me that I've got it wrong. I don't want to hear from them. Sorry. And
and I think it has a lot to do with our intentions and what we're
– go ahead.
Yeah. I think it has to do with what the intentions that we come to the projects with, because I think there are clearly going to be people who come to the project who aren't assuming good faith, who aren't willing to take – an understanding of the fact that somebody has done all this research, or that somebody, does know exactly what they're talking about. And this comes down to the question of where we get our credentials from and what is a bona fides when you're doing this sort of research. But that people see, I think some people, some users look at Wikipedia as being this open thing that anybody can edit, and therefore they make a leap of judgment that then says, which anybody has the same level of understanding to edit in the same way. So that there's ostensibly, for some users, this leveled playing field in terms of your, intellectual contributions that can and should be made to certain areas. And it leads to, like you said, things about, people saying, oh, you don't know what you're talking about because, I did 5 seconds of Google research. And it can be hard to, assume good faith, as, Phil, you did that whole AGF challenge thing. And it can be really tricky sometimes. I mean, you're trying to understand, and appreciate where someone's coming from. But at the same time, you know that they don't know what they're talking about. And you do, and you don't want to let your ego get in the way, and you don't want to own things. And I don't know, Moni, any thoughts about this whole process of keeping yourself open but not wasting your time with meaningless feedback?
Well, a lot of it has to do with how emotionally invested you are with an article, and I've been accused more than once of being too emotionally invested with an article, which, has to, when you spend, lots of money on sources and you spend a lot of time reading about a subject, of course you're emotionally invested in it. I spent all this time writing it. I spent all this time reading about it, and clearly I care about this. I want to tell this story. I want it to be a very, very good story. I want people to learn about this. In fact, not only do I want people to learn about it, but since Wikipedia is so widely used, I want this to be the best outlet of this information available because it's free. And then people come along and say that you're too emotionally invested. And yeah, in some cases I've seen people who are too emotionally invested and they cannot listen to other people, or they just completely refuse to listen to other people's input. And there is, it's right, you do have to at some point say, I have to do this for the sake of the article. And at some point you also have to use your own good judgment to say, this is what the sources say, I have to go with the sources. It sometimes it's not pleasant to get challenged like that. You always have to find your own line and where to say you're going to hold your ground or you're going to say that, yeah, you have a point, and I have to listen to you.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, from my perspective, when I was working on the East Timor article, there was this big question of conflict of interest because I work with an East Timor advocacy group. But, you know, the point for me is that, and this is like why I went into teaching, for instance, like I'm a believer that, you know, good things in the world will happen when people have information about a topic. And for me, it's about access to information. And, you know, so if I'm writing an article about what happened in East Timor, I'm doing it because I want the story to be told. And I'm not afraid to let information that doesn't fit with my own personal political perspective into the article, because that won't detract from the overall truth about what happened. And that's ultimately the key point. And I think that's probably fair to say, you know, one of the articles you've written about, you know, Stonewall or Harvey Milk or whatever it is, you know, there is, I think, a point of view, you know, if I were a creationist, I don't want to speak on behalf of creationists, but it seems like, you know, a situation where I might be, you know, hesitant to, you know, allow certain things into an article because it might undercut my perspective. But I think folks who have, you know, who do have that, you know, ultimate goal of everybody having access to information and then letting people make up their own minds, we're willing to let other perspectives in because it's not going to hurt the overall understanding, and the understanding is what's really important there.
Now, one thing I was just noticing in the chat, Moni says, I sent invitations out to 6 organizations about the Everglades, and no one responded, unfortunately. Were those on Wiki, or were they outside of Wiki? Moni?
I emailed the University of Florida, IFAS Extension in Belglade, Florida, and 5 organizations who are dedicated to preserving the Everglades, to ask them to come read the articles, give comments, and tell me where I've been inaccurate. And I got a couple of emails saying, yes, I'd like to do that, but no one actually followed up saying, you need to change something, or I got no reviews back. So these were email invitations that I sent out.
Interesting, because
I've... unfortunate. I mean, it could serve as a starting point for them to be involved in the project as a whole. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've tried that. I'm kind of unclear, and maybe you guys could give me some input. I'm kind of unclear if this is frowned on. I think it's kind of frowned on by the Wiki community, but maybe not. In the case of a couple of BLPs and a couple of organizations where one or two central people are involved, and I've written the article or cleaned up the article, I have actually then contacted them by email, just like Moni did. I've contacted them and said, take a look at this. Did I get it right? Do you think I've screwed this up, or what's your impression? And I kind of got the impression that was frowned on. And in all cases where I've contacted them privately, I don't even know if I should say who it is, they said, well, you got this wrong a little bit, but could you add this little bit here? This is inaccurate. Here's the reference you're looking for, not that one. And what have you. And we've actually had a good interchange, and I think it's improved the article in the 3 or 4 cases that I've known. And I don't know, what do you think? Is that frowned on? What's your impression?
I think it's a case-by-case situation from where I sit. I mean, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, getting information from somebody who has specific details about, you know, in their case, their own life or whatever it is. I think the main concern people would have is that there's a danger that there's going to be some sort of covert behind the scenes, and especially if it's non-transparent, you know, shifting of the article or inclusion of certain sources, exclusion of other sources, that will make the subject look better, look worse, you know, look a certain way, push a certain POV. So I would say the most important thing is to make it as transparent as possible so that there's no concerns about that, you know, shady happenings behind the scenes. But, you know, I think there's also a great value in that. Like, for instance, when I was doing the Harriet Tubman article, one of the women who wrote one of the books about Harriet Tubman actually was contributing to Wikipedia. And, like, it was great to have her there and saying, you know, this is what the research does show. And you know, it sort of – there were worries about we were getting into original research there. But it was also a great way for us to, you know, sort of verify things and respond to people who said, oh, well, you know, what about this and that? Moni, did you have something about – Ann Bannon or Marjorie Stoneman Douglas?
Actually, Ann Bannon was my first featured article, and of course, as soon as I posted it, I told her about it. But at that point, it was my first written article. So let anybody who is reading this not go back and take a look at how bad that was. But it has, hopefully grown in quality, and she goes back and she reads it every once in a while, and